From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. We are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love, and we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And today on the show, we have people that have been supporting me in the backyard, and they are deep in the middle of our backyard, some of my favorite people, and we're here to talk about one of my favorite things. We have Ashley Haney, Adrian Farron, and Adriana Reagan. They are of Haney Real Estate. So I think we can guess what the subject is. My favorite subject, or one of them, is real estate. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Ashley, maybe I'll have you start by just a little description of what Haney Real Estate is. You've obviously built this business after selling your previous company, but what are you today?
Thanks for having us, and thanks for getting dressed up for us today.
I wore a collared shirt. I knew you guys would look good.
You have the A-team in the house, so you had to have your A-team outfit.
I didn't take a shower, so I don't smell good.
Though. That's awkward. Okay. All right. Well, we're here to talk about real estate. So our team is compiled of three of us, myself, Adrian, and Adriana. We kind of like to call ourselves the A-team, not only because we all start with the letter A, but we are the best team in the Sacramento region. We are a residential boutique real estate company. We specialize not only in helping people buy and sell residential real estate, but we really specialize in investments, and we own and manage multiple Airbnbs in the area, and we manage the one of the largest co-working spaces in Sacramento region.
The Growth Factory.
Yeah,
we'll talk about all three of those things, but maybe I'll have Adrian, why don't you introduce yourself too, and what's your role on the team?
Sure. So I'm Adrian Farron, and I've worked with Ashley for the better part of 9 years, and my role is to support her business and bring my real estate business experience to the team, and then help manage the building here at the Growth Factory and our short-term rentals.
All right. And maybe Adriana, maybe you can jump in too and give your background.
Yeah. Hi, yeah. I'm Adriana Reagan. I've been with Ashley for about a year now. I think it's been just now a year. I think I celebrated my 1 year like a couple weeks ago. I kind of dip into a little bit of everything. I do my own production as well as assisting with the short-term rentals as well.
All right. Well, we want to find out. Let's start with the overall market right now. And I want to get your perspective on the market in the Sacramento region, Placer County, and maybe how that, I guess, it might contrast with the rest of the U.S.
Yeah, if you would have asked me 90 days ago, I might have a different feeling. They forecasted at the beginning of this year that the real estate values were going to go up about 5%. So immediate equity for anybody buying a home. We saw a really, really slow first quarter, in my opinion. But we are seeing a huge trajectory for quarters two and three. Last year, there was a big influx of first-time buyers coming into the market. They weren't scared of interest rates, right? And so they got into the market. But we're seeing the luxury and ultra-luxury market really taking off in our area this year.
Well, a lot of this is about supply and demand when it comes to pricing. So, you know, I follow the stats a little bit. It looks like there's more supply on the market than maybe there was maybe shortly after the pandemic started. It kind of tightened up for a while there. Now there's a few more days on the market, so it seems like that means more inventory. Is that right?
I would say yes and no. Supply is increasing a little bit. We're still in a seller's market with only 2 months of inventory in our area. But what we're seeing is buyers are being a little more particular, right? And so it's not necessarily that they have a lot more options to choose from, but if they're making that choice because of the higher interest rates, they're just wanting it to be the right decision.
Okay, so 60 days, I mean, I'm kind of a novice in when it comes to like what a normal amount of housing on the market is. 60 days sounds like it's a little on the tighter side. What would get us to normal?
I think if in a couple of weeks on the market prior to getting into escrow is probably a really healthy place. And if houses are priced right now well, they're actually still selling in the first weekend. I would say about half of the listings that we have, they're selling in the first weekend. The other half, we're having people come back 2 to 3 times prior to putting in the offer.
Okay. So are there more listings coming on the market right now then?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing more listings coming on the market, and we're really strategic in our timing. We don't want to get put a house with a pool on the market at the 4th of July if they don't have a pool.
So I was thinking the people that might not be putting their houses on the market are the people with these 2.5-3% loans on their house. They've got them extended out for 30 years. So they got maybe another, I don't know, 25 years to pay on those things. Why would you sell something like that?
So there's common things that happen in life. There's death, there's divorce, there's relocation, there's situational changes. So if you have a 2% interest rate, but you're in a two-story house and you can't walk up the stairs, you have to sell. Interestingly enough, I haven't seen a huge influx of people leaving the state of California for the last couple of years. But in our business right now, we have about a third of our clientele who are actually relocating out of state right now. The other third are getting a divorce or getting remarried or blending a family. And then the other third are our traditional buyers.
What about during the pandemic? I remember like the U-Haul statistics saying how many people were moving to our region, and that was driving up home values and things like that. Are people still coming into our region at the rate that they're leaving?
I don't know about that. We have seen a bunch of people actually coming back. It's harder to return than it is to leave.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was thinking about during the pandemic, obviously there was that remote work thing. So if you work in the Bay Area, you could move to Sacramento, buy a house and work remotely. And we'll talk about co-working spaces and our suites and specifically in a little bit later in the show. But are you seeing the return to work affect the consumer in terms of what they want to buy?
I would say yes and no. I think the market that's going to be really affected is going to be Lake Tahoe. All those people who bought these homes in Tahoe thinking they can work from home, live by the lake, I think those are the people that are going to be affected the most.
Okay, so maybe it's a good time to go buy a house up there.
I'm thinking... For me personally, more towards the end of the year.
Okay. For you personally. Oh, okay.
If it was for a
friend.
That's
good to know. Okay, so maybe we'll get into a little bit of, I think people who are thinking about selling their house or thinking about maybe buying a house, maybe we'll start with the seller perspective. I'm getting ready to sell my house and what do I have to do? I have to prep the house in some way to get it ready to sell? What? Any advice on that?
Oh my gosh. So I would just say less is more. People don't, they want to come in and envision themselves.
Clean the house, basically.
Well, number one, clean the house. Number two, get rid of your crap.
Yeah.
You're going to be moving anyways. Get a box, put everything in the box. Nobody wants your family photo on the wall and they're seeing themselves there. They don't want to see you there. Adrian,
I think... If you're a really good-looking family,
no,
is that an exception?
Don't care, because then, okay. Then you think about it. Adrian, we've been working with a stager recently who... She does a pre-listing walkthrough, and she gave us some really good tidbits. Adrian, you did the last walkthrough with her. Maybe touch on some of those things that you've heard.
Yeah, definitely. She did a great job of educating the seller and really being that neutral party to come in and let them know that... You know, depersonalizing it is so that these buyers can again walk in and envision themselves in their space, right? So instead of spending time looking at the family photo and really seeing, do I know that person or they look familiar and getting distracted, if you will, when you remove that, they can really look and try and envision their space. And she even touched really delicately on, you know, touching on religious symbols and so forth, that we all have different beliefs. So again, maybe removing
that. You might turn off some of the clients. Just based upon your personality.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So she's been really good at being a buffer for us as well when we're discussing with clients that process of decluttering. And then she takes it a step further and will help us stage, if necessary, bring in furniture and so forth.
What about like a Trump flag? Is that okay?
So it all depends on the clientele.
You'll eliminate probably 60% of the California buyers. Okay. So when you're walking through with these people, though, I'm imagining... Is that sensitive because they've got these sacred cows or whatever that, you know, personal things, they don't understand that, no, that's actually junk, lady.
Yeah, sir. So we have to have those really hard conversations because ultimately we're here to sell your house. I'm not here to list your house. And so they're hiring us to get them their maximum return. And I have to be honest. And so usually I do a first walk and then I do a recap. And then if they're listening, then that's good. If not, I bring in reinforcements and we have like a code word, you know, where we're like, hey, Adrian, what do you think about that? And Adriana, how do you feel about cows or whatever? Yeah. And so we all can kind of vibe together, but it's listening too, because you can tell if it's their hot point and you don't want to get fired before you even sell it.
Well, you mentioned maximizing the return. How besides having the house looking good, how do we maximize the return by decluttering, depersonalizing it at some level? You know, get the house, obviously, it should be painted and clean and looking sharp, ready to sell so they can, I don't know, see themselves in that environment.
Yeah, every property is a little bit different, but typically that's the big thing. And then coming up with a good marketing strategy. Right now we're seeing our market that it's a very open house heavy market. It's shocking because agents are lazy. Well, self-admittedly, not myself, of course, not our team. But agents don't want to go run around all weekend and show their clients property. Well, you have a great open house strategy to get these buyers in. One, a lot of times they don't have agents, which is shocking. And two, this might be the only time they're going to see the house because their agent might be on Folsom Lake hanging out with their kids or at a softball game. So Adriana's mastered the open house game. And so just this last weekend, she had like 30 or 40 families in a 4-hour period come through. So I don't know what the heck she's doing, but she's my open house girl and I let her do her thing.
All the signage everywhere.
Okay, so we go into open house for Haney Real Estate. What differentiates it from, let's say, some major name brand?
Honestly, our listings are stunning. That helps a lot. I think just the preparation beforehand, like just making sure we're communicating with the sellers and, you know, just being very communicative with the buyers coming in. We get a lot of neighbors that have been coming in a lot lately, which also we can transfer those into clients someday too. And they're telling their friends. We do a lot of social media. We do posting videos, everything we can just to market the property for our clients.
Yeah. Okay. So I know that, when you get multiple buyers interested in one property, that can drive the price up. So we're talking about maximizing the return for our seller. How do you get multiple people involved? Is that sort of a goal?
I think that's a goal. So I'm going to use the listing that we just had last week as a great example. I went to the listing appointment and frankly, the people just had very bulky furniture. The kitchen was outdated and they had some of those taste specific decor. And so we went in and they are dream clients. They listened to every single thing that I recommended. I didn't know going into it if they were willing to put money into the house because a lot of people don't have that extra revenue. This house happened to be $1.5 million. So it's not our $500,000 house. And I thought the house was worth about $1.5 million. I said, hey, but if we update your kitchen and we put $75,000, I can't guarantee we're going to get you more than that $75,000, but you're going to open it up to a lot more buyers. Mm. Not only did they do that, and so then that would be $1.575, we listed it competitively and we're in escrow with multiple offers at $1.8 million.
Okay, so let me just break this down for the potential seller out there. If you have more buyers, that's going to drive up the price. So if you can open it up to more people by having it be a little more universally pleasing, you're going to get more offers.
Yeah.
And those offers sort of compete with one another, drives up the price. Ultimately, the return for the seller is better, even though maybe you've had an upfront effort or cost associated with doing that.
But people are willing to overpay, but they want it to be their decision. So that's why you want to get those buyers. You get them in there, you get them emotional, and then they get a little competitive. And that's how you drive the price up. Like this house, I would have never priced it at the $1.8 million because we just wouldn't have gotten there when we would have chased the market backwards. Instead, we priced it correctly. They listened to our advice and we were able to ultimately drive up the price for them.
Okay, so what are the goals? Return on investment, nobody's going to deny that that's one of the objectives when we sell our house. It's our biggest investment. It's in many cases more valuable than our small businesses. It's just our houses have a lot of value, big part of our net worth. Besides that, though, what are the other, objectives that sellers have typically? Why else do we want to sell? You mentioned moving and things like that, but are there other things that we want to accomplish?
Yeah, so I have two other examples right now of people that are selling for different reasons. One, he was a hoarder. So he wanted an easy deal. He didn't care necessarily about the return on his investment. Mm. He wanted an easy transaction, someone to come pay cash, and for him to walk away and not have to deal with his stuff all over the yard. Just for perspective, that house is a $500,000 house. I've had to spend $25,000 on junk removal just for the crap that was left behind. So you can imagine if someone is low in equity or liquidity, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. Additionally, if you're going through a divorce, sometimes you want easy. You're splitting the money anyways. So of course you want to get your money out of the deal, but ultimately, maybe you need to work with someone who can keep the transaction easy and not cause any more issues with your custody battle.
Mm-hmm. I know of people who have sold their house, and then they wanted to stay in it for, mm-hmm. I don't know, 3, 6, 12 months, rent it back from the new seller, but they wanted to kind of get it off their books, if you will, but yet stay for a while because they're not relocating for, say, 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, I would just say that in this situation, we are seeing that being more common because people aren't knowing where they're going. We're seeing a lot of people that are house rich and maybe cash poor, so you can cash out. Technically, per our contract, you can only stay in a house 59 days after the close of escrow if it is a financed home. If you pay cash for the home, then they can have more flexibility on that. So,
oh, interesting. Is that a California law?
Yes.
Wow. You can't get around that, huh?
Not legally.
I cannot disclose.
Not legally.
Okay, so now from a buyer's standpoint, you're saying it's a seller's market. Any thoughts on if you're a buyer, is this the time to jump in? Obviously, we're seeing things continue to escalate. We all know what's going on politically. We've had inflation over the last several years. We have tariffs going into effect. We have migrant workers getting shipped out of the country, which means less people, theoretically, to build the homes and do the work. So the cost of building a house is likely to go up. I mean, where, if you were to put on the crystal ball hat, mm-hmm. is now like you should do it now versus, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, or could we be peaking and it could come down? Maybe a recession comes and it causes it to go down.
I would say, you know, the best time to buy was when rates were at 2%. But historically, throughout history, real estate values have gone up 100% of the time. So if you go and you say, oh, the interest rate's too high, well, if you're renting, you're paying a 100% interest rate. I would turn to Adriana. She's the one out showing most of our buyers the properties and walking properties even this morning. Mm-hmm. So what are you seeing out there in terms of that?
Of buyers shopping, I mean, being competitive in the sense of, I feel like buyers at the same time are being really picky when they're out shopping, but, you know, they're still out there. Buyers mm-hmm. are still looking to buy.
Well, real estate is an investment. So I was thinking about, you know, we talk about the price of a house. So the house, I lived at 508 Arlene.
Yeah.
That was my first house I bought, which is a little halfplex. Paid $55,000 for it in the early 80s. And so I had a variable rate interest rate loan that was bought down to like 11.5, right? From like 13.5, but it was variable. So it could go up, it could go down. And this would have been 1983, I think, 84. Anyway, thinking about that, that was a long time ago. What's that house worth today, though? If it was worth $55,000 then,
yeah.
What would something like that? It's worth $500,000 now?
I was going to say $450,000. It's right by your house, Adriana.
It's like worth 10 times as much as it was.
Yeah.
And realistically, I was living with my mom and dad at the time, but I would have been renting anyway. So instead of renting for about the same price, I went and bought.
Yeah.
And then...
And there's additional tax benefits that go with it too. And for those who are still working from home or even partially at home, there's the tax write-offs of your home office and all of those things too.
So long term, I mean, real estate's not a bad investment, especially if we're going to be in a mode where, you know, everything's going to cost a little bit more in the future.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and you can finance it. So you get put a, can you still do like a 90% loan
to value?
You
can do as low as 3% down. And right now they're just really trying to make home ownership cool again. I think generation there might have been skipped there that didn't see the value in home ownership. But the feds are doing these grants, for example, right now. It's a first time buyer or for somebody who hasn't owned a home in 3 years. They will give you $50,000 grant towards your closing costs.
Grant. So they give you the money
and you can turn around and resell the house the next day. We know it works because Adriana used it last year to buy her first house.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So they gave you 50 grand?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you use that 50 grand as your down payment then. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So you buy a $500,000 house and they give you the entire down payment.
She had to put $10,000 down mm-hmm. and that was it.
Wow.
So now she has immediate equity in her house. And so it is a middle income grant. So those people who should be buying a home or could be buying a home, but maybe you're just scared to get off the fence. So she turned around and she had 50 grand immediate equity. Her house will go up another 25,000 this year because of its 5% you know, going, and she's got a good little nest egg.
And it's
got
to be an owner-occupied house then. Uh-huh. And you have to be a first-time home buyer, or you haven't bought a house in a while?
In 3 years. Okay. So the grant funds do run out. So they did it last year, and it lasted about 6 weeks. It kicked off about a week ago, so they're only thinking it'll last a couple more weeks because of... People look at it and they're like, is this a scam? And we were kind of concerned, but then we guinea-pigged Adriana on it. It wasn't a scam. And so we've been able to help several of our clients using, why wouldn't you take free money?
Yeah. Exactly. Makes People sense. Always, free money, here, what's the catch? And we say, no catch. People are still like, okay, what's the catch? No, literally, it's free money.
Yeah.
No brainer.
What about this whole thing with the buyer agent, right? It's been making the news over the last year or two where... you've got to provide more disclosure, and it's got, I don't know, it's made the news. You know, there's a lot of people trying to scare you out there about what's going to happen to real estate and the quality of service and all this kind of stuff.
I will touch on this because it's a really delicate subject in our industry. The bottom line is it's just a little bit more paperwork and a lot more transparency. I think what happened was people were negotiating listing commissions, and they weren't being transparent on how the money was being divided up, and it really should have been disclosed. And so now, honestly, we're seeing the sellers paying the compensation about 99% of the time, maybe 100. I haven't seen one where a buyer's come in to pay it. But it's just more transparency, which should be out there anyways.
Oh, I forgot to mention, you were the president of the Placer County Association of Realtors a couple
last
of
times
last year, and a few years back you were as well. And then, are you on the California Board of Realtors?
Yes.
And so you know a little bit about this stuff, but you were also Realtor of the Year for Placer County last year?
Yes.
Yeah, I forgot. Okay, yeah. So making sure that I have my stats. I've been bragging about you. I want to make sure I'm not like telling it wrong. Okay, good.
Why I have to be very delicate. I mean, talking about anything compensation is very, it's not something that should be talked about freely. And so it's very... cautious. So I think transparency and a little more paperwork, and honestly, the real estate sales is the same as it was before.
Okay, give me a funny story about some buyer or seller being super nervous because it's their biggest thing. It's like it can freak people out because, you know, I think for people that flip houses and do all this stuff, we have friends and I do this. I don't even look at the house and, it's no big deal. But people freak out because it's their house.
Oh, they freak out for sure. Do you want to touch on this or do you want me to?
I mean, I think we should have Adriana speak to her buyer freakouts this week for our listing. I mean, Ashley has this incredible listing in Penryn, and Adriana, because she's our open house converter, has these clients that keep coming back wanting to write, and we're at the 11th hour, and then she's calling me at, 10 o'clock at night. Hey, quick question. Can I run this by you? And I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, no, they have seen the house 3 times. They come back every time. We just did open houses again last weekend. They were 100 ready to go. They were going to go there. I knew they were going to go. And that night, they call me and say, we're ready to write the offer. Mind you, second time they've told me this. We're ready to write the offer. Full price. Let's get it in. I'm like, perfect. I get it written up. We're ready to go. They call me a couple times to check in and just verify a couple things on the offer. And I'm like, all right, sweet. Sent it out. They're reviewing it. 30 minutes goes by. They call me cold feet again. And it's just, sometimes it takes a little bit for them to get off the fence, but then we have another offer in. And they texted me yesterday and they said, if anything falls through with that offer, let us know.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, what? What's happening?
But then you have people like, I was showing property in the ghetto, let's just be honest. And we walk in and my client is walking around the house and his daughter, who's 8 years old, likes to go look in each room and pick out a room. She goes to walk in the bedroom and there's a naked man on the floor and she runs out screaming and the guy goes, I like the house. We'll take it. So you got all kinds of stuff.
They're very calm.
It's a good deal.
That's so hilarious.
You know what?
You guys see all kinds of stuff. That's amazing. Okay, so let's move away. Anything else on residential real estate that we should touch on before I move on?
If your house is on the market, just make sure your front door's locked because we definitely have walked in on people in their houses too. So that's my tidbit. But
don't let your 8-year-old kid walk around the house without you checking first.
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, so let's move to short-term rentals. It's something that we have a little bit of knowledge on. People are using rental properties that we have been for years as investment properties. And I know that rental prices for long-term rentals are not going up as fast as the price of the houses, I guess because apartments have been, you know, built, multifamily homes have been built. So I don't think the rents are skyrocketing on, you know, long-term rentals. Is that a fair statement, that rents aren't quite keeping up with the price of houses?
I would say that the rents are still constantly going up.
Okay.
You know, they're not going up like they were before in, you know, 10% per year, but they're definitely still increasing.
But short-term rentals are a way to possibly make a little bit more money, yeah, in some cases. Tell us about that business strategy, and because I've heard that that's even got somewhat overbuilt, but I don't know that.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to saturate.
Overbought, I should say.
Yeah, oversaturate the market. We've been able to create something really cool through Placer Valley Properties is who we run ours under, our business. And we have about 20 short and midterm rentals. We do not do any long-term rentals. So I think that's what differentiates us, is we don't want the people that are going to be there for years and years. We want the people who've had an insurance claim, who maybe have sold their house and don't have anywhere to go. And a lot of ours are being used for people coming for funerals and weddings and coming to visit grandkids. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really, really interesting process over the last 3.5 years to navigate this business. And definitely have some stories for this one.
Yeah, so this one is one where you're basically turning your house into more like a hotel. Mm-hmm. So you've got to, what, put hand lotion and shampoo in the thing?
I'll let Adrian. Adrian has the startup checklist, so you tell us what you do.
We do. We have it's completely furnished. So the goal is that when we have guests come into any of the properties, it is fully furnished, and everything from hangers to salt and pepper, mm-hmm, and Ziploc bags, right? Wow. Laundry pods. So we really want them to feel at home. And, you know, Ashley and Adriana and I were talking about this morning, that I think our real estate experience has really helped us be so successful in what we do, because we're used to going into homes and having a high expectation of what it should look and feel like. And we've been able to execute that with our properties.
How do you decide what furniture to put in for someone to rent? Because you don't want to go do ultra luxury, but yet it needs to be, I guess, functional.
Exactly. So I'm not going to tell you all of our trade secrets.
Okay.
I will tell you that we definitely have a blend between Amazon, Target, Living Spaces. Mm-hmm. It is a conglomerate. We do have a checklist for each room. And we know for each bedroom, how many towels for the kitchen, how many place settings and so forth. But it really is a blend of just knowing what's, you know, popular right now. Again, mm-hmm, I think that blends with real estate. So that kind of comfortable farmhouse, we don't want to over invest in case something gets ruined. People love to bring their fur pets. That's something that has made us very appealing to people when booking our properties. But nice enough where they feel very, very comfortable, clean.
If someone was thinking about buying a home, or maybe making their home a short-term rental, what are the things that make a good short-term rental? Like, I know a swimming pool, people want to get a swimming pool. And I was thinking that being close to some kind of entertainment or some venue where they may work, like a traveling nurse, you're next to a hospital, something like that. What other things go into making a good short-term rental?
Yes, you're exactly right. The properties with pools, especially during the summer, are huge wins for us, for sure. The walkability to local restaurants is another great feature, because people like to explore. We put together a custom welcome book for each of our properties that also help them navigate things to do and live like a local, depending on, you know, which home that they're at. So walkability to restaurants, close to different venues, and then also just being aware of different events that go on in our area. So for example, Aftershock in October in Sacramento is a huge event, and we really prepare for that. We plan our pricing accordingly, and it's really effective.
Interesting. The Super Bowl is coming to Levi's, which is Bay Area. Do you think we'll get any people coming out here for the Super Bowl?
I think it's just
that too far.
Yeah. I mean, really South Bay to here. We wondered, in fact, if during the Southern California fires, if we might see a little bit of, you know, surges from there. And no.
Just too far. Mm-hmm. People aren't going to come all the way up here for, you know, short term like that. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So you kind of touched on, there might be some interesting stories around short term rentals. Like, is that around the clientele?
I would say the clientele are generally really nice people. When you're booking an Airbnb, they don't do a credit check. So we have had people who have stayed there and we've had to have them leave because they wouldn't leave. But I'm going to let you guys just take the stories because they're the ones taking the calls at night. And
what's a nighttime call? Yeah, say, yeah. Oh, the toilet's clogged up.
Oh, which time?
Power's out. Something's going
on. Yeah. Well, I mean, a couple of years ago, you might remember we had the crazy storms in January. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was just rain after rain after rain. And we're trying to anticipate, is this gravel roadway going to flood? Can our clients get to and from the Airbnb? And then it ends up being the least of our worries because the power goes out and they don't just not have power, but it's on a well. So now they don't have water. Ooh. So it's just this whole trifecta, right?
And a septic.
Oh, exactly. So that was probably one of the more challenging times for sure.
What about the guy that was overstaying and then maybe there was some feces all over the
He overstayed. He just didn't want to go and
he was having such a good time.
He defecated all over the home.
Oh no.
And then decided to break into our owner's closet where we keep some of the extra supplies for when the cleaners come in because we have an amazing team of cleaners.
Oh, you outsourced the cleaning. Oh, how convenient.
We paid extra on that one.
It is very convenient.
Yeah, so it's hard. I think our biggest challenge is people arriving early. The cleaners are still there and they want to go in. We don't want them to go in because we want them to get a full experience or them staying too late. Like that one person I was telling you, I ended up having to bring reinforcements over to get the guy out and they had Sharpie all over the bed. But I think the weirdest one was the time where we got a call from the neighbors saying that our guest was in the front yard waving guns around and we didn't know what to do on that one. Yeah. So, again, these are like three examples of the thousands of nights that we've had. So generally, it's been really good, but it doesn't come without a little bit of excitement.
By the way, this type of thing can happen in anybody's neighborhood. You guys just happen to get the call when there's a weirdo yep. or a crazy. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, it was our weirdo who was our tenant.
Yeah, I know. So you guys are aware.
But he was paying $9,000 a month for a house that was worth like $2,500. So we're like, okay.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So let's say a typical house, I'm just going to pick out a number. A 4-bedroom, 3-bath house might rent for $3,000 a month in Rockland, Roseville, Loomis, even Sacramento, $3,000, $3,500. That same house, if you did a short-term rental, the top line would be quite a bit higher. Mm-hmm. How does it net out? How much would the top line be? I know it's ups and downs and it's hard to predict, definitely, but
a risk reward, right? And there's seasons, the winter seasons are definitely a little bit slower, but the summer seasons are way busier. I'll give an example of one of the properties that we have in our area. I'm not going to say cities because of local ordinances that we all comply to, of course. Mm-hmm. But it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house and it has a pool. If you were renting it out, we'd probably get $3,000 a month for it. Our highest month in the summer, we grossed over $10,000. Averaging about $6,700 per month for that property that would otherwise go about $3,000. Granted, you do pay utilities on that, but otherwise that's really
the only difference. You pay utilities and the cleaning gets passed along to the client.
Mm-hmm.
You pay utilities and then you pay for the calls in the middle of the night and all the different challenges.
You pay
challenges,
for the management fee.
Probably more wear and tear and the stolen towels.
Yeah, you have a management fee, but you'd pay that if you were renting it out using a property management company anyways. We're competitive with what that is. But there is the turnover costs if we have to replace pillows. So a minimal cost though.
So overall, it's going to net a little bit better, maybe quite a bit better.
I would say not quite double, but yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Also with our third party, so there's the Airbnbs, the VRBOs and so forth. They also have insurance coverage, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. So if there is actually some significant damage or let's say all the pillows or bedding needs to be replenished, they'll actually cover that. So that isn't passed on to our property owners.
And I would think that, say, I'm even thinking like a corporate person might be on some large company expense account and they're not squeezing you on the rental price. Okay, so it's an extra $1,000 a month. No big deal.
Well, you figure if you're a corporate executive and you're an executive and you're sending an employee to go live in a hotel for a mm-hmm. month, let's just say at best it's $200 a night, right? Yeah. Plus you're giving a stipend, plus all of that. $200 a night times 30 days is $6,000 per month, okay? Yeah. And then in our Airbnbs, they can sleep two or three or four executives in one. So it's a huge savings for them.
Okay. So yeah, a group of people that are in town for, let's call it 6 to 12 months on a project could live together and save a lot of money.
We see that a lot. We have a corporate executive, which we cannot tell you who it is because it's top secret, but they want their COO, CEO, and CFO to be able to rotate. They live out of state and they want to be able to have an executive at all times here. So they're going to pay us double what we were getting for our long term.
Ashley, do we have any athletes right now?
We cannot confirm nor deny any local athletes.
Oh, professional athletes come in and they
Sutter
may not.
Maybe Sutter Park?
You never know. I could get traded or I live somewhere else, but I'm, you know, relocated here for
hypothetically,
to swing a baseball bat.
Hypothetically, your team was relocated here and you don't know if you want to stay or how long you're staying. We might have some of that.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
We might also sometimes convert them into clients for the real estate side too.
Yeah. Good job. Yeah. Good thinking. Okay. So now I want to go to here at the Growth Factory.
Yeah.
And is there anything else we need to touch on in terms of short-term rentals?
There's a lot, but we'll save that for another show.
Okay. So I had, we had this building here and I've had multiple businesses in it over the years. And when we launched the Growth Factory, we had begun turning it into a co-working space, but it was kind of working okay. You know, we had some of our businesses here, some of our a little bit bigger businesses here, and they moved out and you took it over and created now what is essentially, I think we're in the Business Journal as one of the top in the Sacramento region. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the Growth Factory and these co-working suites that we have here and why it's so successful.
Yeah, so we have over 30 private offices, entrepreneurs ranging from attorneys to consultants to real estate professionals and everything in between. We do a month-to-month rental here. And I think that that's really appealing to people because people get nervous to like give such a commitment. What we found too in our month-to-month rental, not to give away all of our secrets again, people come and they don't leave, right? They get comfortable and they like it. I think some of these other office co-working spaces are really nice and they offer all kinds of amenities, but people don't actually use those amenities. For us, we give 24-hour access, we give free printing, free Wi-Fi, and an awesome culture, and we are killing it. We have a wait list.
And we got a great name, Growth Factory.
I think so.
So what do people think of the name Growth Factory when they come in? Is that, because I have to imagine that they want to be in a place where it ties with their personal brand a little bit too. And Growth Factory is kind of it's a bold statement of a name. So I would think that the tenants here would be more growth oriented. Is that a fair statement?
I would like to think so. Sometimes they come in for their daily dose of marijuana, but no, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. But they walk in and the Growth Factory has established such a great name in our community that people walk in and they're like, where's Mark? Where's Rick? They want to synergize with cool people. And I'm like, he's in a meeting, but you can talk to her and let me introduce you to some of our tenants. So no, people love coming into the Growth Factory.
Okay, so I use ChatGPT to develop, because I was wondering, like, what do people look for in a co-working suite and what makes a good one? So the essentials, guess what the first one is? Any
Coffee.
Guesses?
Accessibility.
Wi-Fi.
Adriana? Location.
Oh,
real
yeah.
estate.
Oh.
Location, location,
oh, yeah,
location.
Yeah,
come
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
That was too easy. That was a bounce pass.
Okay.
So thinking about like us and our location here. So we're on I-80.
Yes.
How do people see that as being, we're in Rockland, so it's like, it probably helps if you live out and around this, you know, Placer County,
yeah.
Citrus Heights. People aren't going to drive from necessarily North Sac to come all the way to us necessarily from a location standpoint, mm-hmm. but, you know, maybe come here versus work out of your house.
Absolutely. And that's why we tried to keep it affordability where it's still profitable for us, because people don't want to go. They have to be able to see the value in it, right? But if your dog is barking in the background, if your kid is in the background, that's really distracting and you're not going to be as productive. So that's why the Wi-Fi is so important here too, to be able to, a lot of Zoom calls.
So we're located though right between Tesla and Porsche along mm-hmm. the freeway. You can walk either way you go outside our business to places to shop and have lunch
yeah.
or have breakfast, that type of stuff, dinner. So from that standpoint, it's like you drive in here and it you don't really have to leave.
No, you don't. It's really, really convenient.
Okay, so you know what number two is? Affordability.
Okay.
How are we affordable? Or are we expensive?
I would say we're middle of the road. We're not going to be your cheapest place, but we're definitely not going to be on
what's
the top list.
What's the range? So one office is what, $800?
Our lowest office rents for $599 a month. That'll get you a 10 by 10 for $599.
Okay. And then maybe what would be like a 12 by 12, 14 by 14.
Oh, you know, just do the math from there. No, yeah, I'm just kidding.
$899. So $1,200. Okay, so.
No, under $1,000, you can have an office here in a very, very nice size office.
Okay, so then, so affordability and flexibility. Can you do month to month? You got to sign a long-term lease?
We do month to month, and that's really, really important for people.
Okay, okay. So internet, that's number three on the list. You're right in there. Do we have good internet now?
Yes.
We do now.
All right, good. What about community and culture and that kind of stuff? Is that, do our tenants come for that or do they stay for that or both?
I would say they stay for that and they stay for these two. Adrian gets the most conversation, so I'll let you tell about that.
Yeah, I mean, the culture that we've cultivated here has been phenomenal. So, I mean, when the Growth Factory, the initial private offices were full and we expanded and built out the other side, and the offices were full before we knew it. So we've touched a little bit on our tenants and the type of people. Definitely a lot of entrepreneurs, people that like to interact. Mm-hmm. They love coming by the office and chatting with us, even when if they have a small issue or the printer's out of paper, it's not a text or an email. They like to stop by and chat. They like to talk about their business or ask about real estate or ask how they can be on the Mark Haney Show. So.
They like fantasy football, some of them,
yeah,
huh?
Yes, exactly.
And it gives you a purpose, though, to show up somewhere. Like, I would relate it to working out, right? You can work out at home and you can work out pretty hard. But if you're working out at a gym and you're surrounded by other people that are working hard, it's inspiring.
Okay, so in our building, we have areas where you can, people walk out to the parking lot and get on a phone. We have conference rooms. We've got a lobby that's big. It's a good place to meet people. I would say, what I've seen is people are sort of proud to invite people here.
Yeah.
What goes into that and creating that experience?
Yeah. So obviously having a clean environment when people get here, they want to know that what they're getting, that they're going to have a clean conference room, or that the bathrooms are going to be clean, or the vending machine's full, or that someone's there to greet them. And I think we've been able to cultivate that because we've synergized with the businesses. We want to promote the other businesses within the building. And while they don't have to use plaster concrete for their concrete, they want to be able to talk to Bob and ask him about concrete. And so we can guide them over to there, and that's brought him business. And then if Bob has a question on a legal issue, he's going to walk down the hall and talk to our other tenants. So we do bi-monthly get together. So our last one was last week for the kickoff of Major League Baseball season. We did hot dogs and peanuts and got everybody together. People stopped by for 5-10 minutes and get back to work.
All right. So the events and learning was number eight. Secure access, 24/7 access.
We have 24/7 access, but it is secured by code.
So that's number seven. Great amenities. We talked about that a little bit. It does say coffee, kitchen, printing.
We have that.
You get all that?
We have coffee, kitchen, and printing. We know some of our other people, they have like a full candy bar and all this stuff they're spending thousands a month on. People don't really care about that stuff.
And clean. It's pretty clean. Yeah. And brand alignment. I touched on that with the Growth Factory. Mm-hmm. I think a name like the Growth Factory says, hey, let's be a forward leaning, get it done, get in here and figure out a way to win. So I think we have people that want to win here, and that can be infectious.
And that's really cool too, because we have a lot of our community leaders coming in, the mayors, the county supervisors. So to rub elbows with people like that in the hallway is really cool.
Yeah. Okay. So next 10 differentiators, noise and distraction, check the box, parking. We got a lot of parking as compared to like downtown.
We have so much parking.
Go to a parking garage and natural light.
We have so much parking that we have a car dealership running out half of our parking lot. That's how innovative we are, right?
Okay, so what are the biggest hurdles you've run into, and you know, what's the vision for the Growth Factory?
I think some of the biggest hurdles that we ran into initially is just being at capacity so quickly. Mm-hmm. And while that's a wonderful problem to have, was just adapting to that and amping up our Wi-Fi service, which, mm-hmm. I mean, the great news is that everyone here is definitely all hands on deck. We're here to support each other and get results and get it done correctly and quickly. So I'd say that was probably, that's probably been the biggest challenge, which has been put to rest. And now, honestly, the focus is just maintaining the culture, which is frankly really easy with the tenants that we have, mm-hmm. the events that we do.
Very cool. Okay, so what did I not ask you that we want to cover? Last question, just what did I not ask you that you want to make sure that our audience understands about anything real estate, finance, in terms of, you know, financing your real estate, anything?
You guys want to start?
You go ahead.
I don't even know.
What did he ask you?
So much.
All right. Well, I think one of the things that is really cool about what we're doing, I mean, we could talk about real estate all day long. I think it's all about relationships, and we've been able to really cultivate our relationships. And I think that all of us have a unique history prior to being in real estate that has really shaped our career and that makes the team that we are. I love what we've created. We are innovative and we are all about having fun and making money. And so we'd love to sit down and share stories with anybody or pick brains about real estate. So we live and breathe all things real estate.
Love it. So, well, thank you for coming on the show. Appreciate all the help that you do for me. And I know you work with a lot of the people in the backyard. And so we all appreciate your help on better understanding our opportunities in real estate. So thank you.
Thanks. And thanks for having us on your show.
Thank you so much.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.